It's low tech, man.
Low tech, but hey, low tech is the best tech sometimes. That's what works.
All right, so let's just start the show.
All right, let's start it up. Should we introduce ourselves?
Well, they should know who we are, but if they don't, this is Michael Gutierrez.
And this is Jordan Norman on this side.
And I don't even know if we have a name for the show yet. I don't know if it's going to keeping it real. We probably will for a while.
I think we should just be keeping it real. I mean, I like the other name. Should I even say it? Is it spoiler friendly?
Oh, sure. Just go ahead and say the other name.
The name we test grouped in misogyny. Misogyny. It's appropriate. It's an appropriate name.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
They're just trying to cut out that female market.
they probably wouldn't listen to us anyway. I don't know. I don't know who would. I don't know a woman that would and actually benefit from it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Not that we don't love women. I mean, uh-oh.
I love women.
I do from time to time, depending on the woman, I guess.
I love a special lady.
Oh, shout out time.
No, I'm not going to say her name.
You shouldn't. But we all know who she is.
Because I might want to talk shit on her and then just say it's another name. And then when she asks me, oh, was that about me? I can say, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, I clearly said the name and it wasn't yours.
Yeah.
You need to listen closely.
Yeah, because she would love that feedback.
Hey, yeah, well, you need to listen for once in your life. What's wrong with you?
Listen, bitch. Don't you listen to my podcast. You just assume I'm cheating on you when I'm really just talking through the speaker on my phone to my friend, recording it on my voice memo.
Again, low tech is the best tech. That's what I say. They'll be sifting through decades and hundreds of years of all these files of humanity, and in like 100 years from now, they're going to find this, and you'll be like, wow, look what these guys did with just a couple of phones and an internet connection. Genius.
And then they're going to find our bones and put us in a museum.
Yeah, they should. I want little space kids, little tan space kids, to come and look at my bones and learn something.
You know, I was talking with my girlfriend the other day about the Elephant Man, and they still have the bones at the hospital that he died at. Well, he didn't die at the hospital, but where they took his body.
Right.
And they took casts of his skeleton, and they placed them in museums all around England. So you can go and like see, you know, it's a reproduction of his skeleton, but that's still like kind of like bizarre. It's still kind of treating him
thank you. I'm glad that you said bizarre. I'm glad that's how you finished that, because it was rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, like I certainly wouldn't want. You know, I mean, like that's still his representation of his remains, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like. I mean, you know, that's, I don't know if you would have that, like, in sharper image, and it's, like, one of 500, and then you put that in your living room, like, oh, yeah, that's a reproduction of the Elephant Man bones.
Right, and it kind of takes away his whole famous quote, you know, I'm not an animal, I'm a human being, yet get a copy of my skeleton and hang it up somewhere.
And this limited edition toothpick made out of my ribs.
Exactly. It's fantastic. Get a Wiimote made out of my femur. It's fantastic.
So you didn't like the Lone Ranger?
You know, that's an amazing segue, and I did not care for the Lone Ranger too much. I don't think it's a bad movie. I'm never going to say it's a bad movie. I'm a huge fan of Gore Verbinski, big fan of Johnny Depp. I could give a crap about Armie Hammer. I think the film was made very nice. Like, it looked great. Production value, it was great. I think the direction was great. I was just bored. It was a little long, and I just did not care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, I know it's a property that they brought back, but that no one is really familiar with, but I'm pretty sure it was called The Lone Ranger, yet the movie was all about Tonto.
Yeah. That's a lot of complaint that a lot of folks have, is that one, it's an old property no one's really familiar with, and two, it doesn't, there wasn't enough Lone Ranger in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I almost, like, it reminded me a lot of the first Pirates, and I liked it a lot because, unlike the subsequent, you know, or the the next chapters of the Pirates movies, you know, with 2, 3, 4, and, you know, and now we're working on 5. Like, all the action, all the story and all that, I felt was just so outlandish, ridiculous,
yeah,
that, I mean, even though you're suspending your disbelief whenever you step into a theater and you're watching, you know, fiction being put in front of you, yeah, I get that. But, you know, when you have Johnny Depp running on, outrunning a giant kraken and
don't forget that sword battle during like a hurricane on top of the mast of the ship. Like,
was that the third one?
That was the third one. That was at World's End. Yeah.
I haven't seen any past the second one.
Well, you did yourself a favor then.
Yeah, because right after I saw the second one, and Barbossa came down the stairs after the credits, I was like, well, that's a giant fuck you. And,
yeah, it really was.
And the producers are like, you know what? For those of you that are smart, you gave us your money once, and now you're not going to give it to us again. But you know what? We know that 95% of you aren't that smart, so fuck you. And come back and give us more money. And that's what they did, you know? Yeah. But, like, the thing that I appreciated about The Lone Ranger is that even all the stuff that was outlandish and crazy, there was a justification for it. And a lot of folks are saying, like, well, that, you know, that's probably an after studio note. Like, what they, you know, spoiler alert, like, the movie starts out with Tonto, who's old, you know, 60 years after the events of the film.
Which looks great, by the way. I don't know. That's a combination, I'm sure, of makeup and some sort of computer effect. Looked great, I thought.
Yeah, and I thought they did a really good job. And I thought that was a good story convention of presenting it. Tonto presenting the story in a flashback and him telling a kid and making it sound a lot more outlandish than it probably was.
Yeah, a little grandiose.
So like, when you go back to the story of the movie, I mean, even the kid points out, like, well, you didn't even tell us how you got out the jail. And then, like, Tonto just, like, stares at him, and then it cuts to him doing something else.
Yeah, dude. We're going to disregard that.
So, I mean, I like that aspect of it. I thought that because it was an origin tale, and I liked the balance of, I mean, or I liked how it was lopsided between Tonto and the Lone Ranger, because I felt like you can't put a character like Tonto, who a lot of Native Americans think is racist and offensive, you know, because I was very concerned about that in the movie. I thought they did a good job of not making him a caricature. Johnny Depp did whatever it was he was doing and what he's been doing for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
So, because he hasn't done anything original since, I don't know, Ed Wood. But, you know, outside of his, you know, eccentricities, I felt like that it was good that you knew Tonto's backstory and why he was doing what he was doing and why would he be the sidekick to the Lone Ranger? Why would he, in a time where his people are being slaughtered by white people, you know, for colonialism and globalization of America,
right?
Like, you need to have a strong justification for him to want to be this guy's sidekick and play second fiddle to him,
right?
And it's almost like he's not second fiddle to the Lone Ranger. Like, he's teaching the Lone Ranger what it is to be all the ideals that the Lone Ranger holds so dear. You know, he's very book smart. He starts out as a lawyer, and he's like, "This is the law, and this is what I believe." And he realizes that the law is corrupt, and be able to do the right thing, sometimes you have to bend some rules a little bit. And like Tano said, he's all about justice. He just wants to do justice. So, I mean, and a lot of the conventions that were there, or a lot of archetypes that you see in other westerns, and I thought they did an homage to that very, very well. And so I enjoyed it. I mean, a lot of the storyline was telegraphed. You've seen a lot of other westerns or a lot of, you know, adventure movies. It's the same beats. You know, you have your hero's journey and you have, you know, the villains. The villains in it were done well. It reminded me a lot was it Rango?
Yeah.
Which is done by the same gentleman, and Johnny Depp was also in that. But, you know, overall, I really enjoyed it. I was surprised how much I liked it, because I was expecting it to just be awful, and it wasn't. But I also feel like the box office reflects how people don't just aren't – I don't know if they weren't ready for this movie or they just didn't want to see it. Or they went in expecting to see Pirates of the Caribbean in the desert, and they didn't get that. Or, you know, and I think in part people are just tired of watching Johnny Depp.
I think that is a lot of it, because I don't think he's bad. I love Johnny Depp. You know, even in the remake of Charlie and Chocolate Factory, I even like him in that, even though that's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. But his performance is a little hackneyed. He's a little old at this point. Like, I really feel like Tonto is a version of, you know, Captain Jack. It's just an Indian version of Captain Jack. Yeah. Instead of like this, right, in putting out the English accent, it's a little more choppy and Indian. Like, excuse me, Native American. All of our Native American listeners, whoops, I lost them right there.
Well, they can go back and hit that bottle.
Hard hit. See that? There we go. That's keeping it real right there. That's getting back to the roots right there. Yeah, overall, I mean, if I were to rate this movie, though, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give it a solid 6. That'd be what I gave it. You know, not quite half, a little bit more than half, but definitely not the full 10.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's fair. I mean, I would bump it up to an 8 only because it kind of shocked me with how well it did certain things and how much I enjoyed it. So, but I'd say that's fair. I mean, it's not the first Pirates movie. It just reminded me, to me, it had the same spirit of the first Pirates film.
See, I think the first Pirates film is so much fun. I think a lot of it had to deal with that spiritual aspect of it, or not spiritual, excuse me, like the supernatural aspect of like the moonlight, and that was fun, and you were like in this world of pirates. I didn't really feel like I was brought into the world of like cowboys or anything. It was like, the mystic element was kind of there, kind of not, depending on how the audience wanted to receive it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It left a lot to interpretation. I wish that they kind of hammered down and had the guts to like, nope, it is mysticism. It is mystical. It is this. This is how it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I can see that as well. I mean, I almost wish that they had done that in terms of solidifying that's the direction they want to go. Leaving it to be ambiguous, then... I mean, I agree with you on that. When you leave it with, when there's so much ambiguity, then you might as well just not put it in there because you're not sticking to it on one side or another. I mean, I could see that completely.
Yeah.
But I remember watching I mean, there's certain things in the movie that I was like, why are they doing that? Like, I remember watching, like, you know that scene where they're at the, and this is all spoilers, and if you listen this far and you haven't seen the movie, fuck you.
But, yeah, I feel no sympathy for you.
But you know, like when they're eating, you know, by a campfire, and there was CGI rabbits that came up. And I turned to my girlfriend. I said, "Why are those rabbits CGI?" and then the rabbits, you know, they did something where it's like, well, I guess they couldn't train rabbits to do that. But
right. But
the rabbits themselves didn't even look believable to me. And I was like,
I think you got
to
say it because if it's spoiler, it's already spoiled. You got to say what happens.
Yeah, that's true.
What rabbits do.
Well, what is it? In that scene, do they kill the scorpion or is that later in the movie?
I forget. I know they attack something. I think it is the scorpion. Like they become like vampire rabbits. And I was like, are those real? Is that something that exists?
Yeah, because I was like, is Armie Hammer like hallucinating? Like, is this like a spiritual quest, which is what Native Americans, you know, certain tribes do, and they engage in that. But there wasn't anything to trigger his spiritual quest. Like, he's just sitting there eating dinner with Tonto, and then these rabbits come, and he observes this violent act. That didn't really make any sense. And I mean, my girlfriend and I both agreed with what's her name. Tim Burton's woman.
Bonham Carter?
Yeah, like why was she in it? Like,
oh, yeah.
Completely, like, wasted.
She has to be in a movie that Johnny Depp is in if it's a summer blockbuster. I think that's just how it has to be. It's in his contract somewhere.
Tim Burton must have told, you know, there must be a clause in his agreement with the ownership over Johnny Depp's soul that if he's not directly involved with the movie, then the mother of his children has to be.
Exactly.
You know, and the moment Johnny Depp wants to stray away, the moment the devil, a.k.a. Tim Burton, is like, I will send your soul in the damnation.
Yeah. But I got to say, her part, though, I mean, I did like her part. I think she does a good job with it. I felt it was kind of ballsy of Disney to have, you know, the burlesque house or hooker house, if you want to call it, in the movie, especially being as grimy as the movie felt. The movie I did like, and I think that's like a carryover from Rango as well, is the griminess. Everything felt so dirty, and not dirty in the terms of like muddy, but dirty as in literally gritty, and you could feel the sweat in every scene, and it was hot, and it was not clean, and this is in a time where, you know, you couldn't just rub some sanitizer on your hands and go on about your day.
Yeah, you know, and it felt like a Western. It felt like, you know, that definitely added to the genre that they were going for. And it really, I mean, because I'm a big fan of John Ford movies. Unforgiven is one of my all-time favorite films. And it felt like that. It really did. Now, there was a number of things that... As an audience member, like, if I'm asking questions and it's not immediately answered or not answered in an ample amount of time, then I just call bullshit. And I'm like, you know what, then I'm just tuning out. Like for example, like, when Tonto and the Lone Ranger were going to that burlesque house, and there's obviously been some issue between the Native Americans and the white people that are there, but Tonto's just walking through like it's no big deal. Yeah. Like, I had a huge issue with that, because I'm like, wait a minute. Like, he should be in a disguise, or he should be in a suit to show that he's not, quote-unquote, a savage. But then they justify, like, why he went through there, and I don't remember off the top of my head, but I felt that it was an okay justification for why he would just walk through there. I remember now. It's because eventually the people just came in a huge crowd and said, well, he's in there, so let's go get him. But they made sure the rally people to get him out, you know, to get him out of the burlesque house.
True. I also feel, too, though, you know, whorehouses are a safe haven for anybody who's, like, different within the community. I feel like that's a theme that goes in movies, you know, like, oh, there's nothing but hookers, then the society looks bad on the hookers, so the hookers will take anybody in, so it's okay.
Yeah. I think that's right, though. You know,
should be.
You know, and it's funny, and we have to talk about Man of Steel after this.
Oh, yeah.
But I went to go see Man of Steel with my father over at the Arclight, and first of all, the Arclight is a wonderful theater. For anyone that has never seen a motion picture at an Arclight theater, I cannot recommend it enough. You know, they don't let people in late. They don't. They kick people out if you use your cell phone. It's quiet. It is a little bit more expensive, but you pay that extra price, and the people that are there to enjoy the cinema, enjoy the movie, and so you're paying for a higher class experience. So I mean, I think normal tickets there are like $15 or whatever, but if you're paying that heavy price tag, like my dad and I did for Man of Steel, you're watching it in the Cinerama Dome, which, for those of you that don't know, it's CinemaScope was like the grandfather of IMAX, and this theater was built for CinemaScope. And so even though it's not an IMAX theater now, they still project films in a high... In a high resolution and in a large format that is bigger than a 16:9 ratio. So movies like Transformers, Man of Steel, you know, I saw The Watchmen there, Spider-Man 3. You know, it looks amazing on the screen, you know, and it's curved a little bit on the sides. And at first it takes some getting used to, but it's wonderful. But anyway, so I say all that to say that they also have some nice perks there, because they are part of, like, there's a lot of premieres that they do there, and a lot of Hollywood really likes Arclight theaters, so they give them a lot of their props and wardrobe for films. I remember the year that Transformers came out, they had all the Autobots outside. When I went
signing autographs?
No, it was, like, literally all the vehicles they used in the movie. Iron Man 2, they had Tony Stark's car out there, so you could take pictures, you know, cool stuff like that for the fans. They didn't have anything for Man of Steel, nothing. And so my dad and I were really disappointed there wasn't at least a suit or something. So we're like, oh, okay, well...
Wait a minute, you mean to tell me they didn't have the pen that Christopher Nolan had to sign his checks? That's nothing?
No, they had nothing like that. They didn't have Christopher Reeve's grave on display showing him rolling in it. Like, nothing.
That's not right. They should.
Yeah, I mean, the irony is that they did have a skeleton and that walked away.
walked right away. And said, no, I heard that the horse was there. The horse was fine. That's so horrible. Really shouldn't be laughing. but there was nothing there. Nothing.
At nothing there. But you know, Steel. You know what they did have. You know what props, what wardrobe they had.
What was that?
From what movie? The Lone Ranger.
What, they have a mask? They have a hat? Did they?
They had the everything that was in that, well, not everything, but what Armie Hammer was wearing, and Johnny Depp was wearing, and Helen was wearing all in that that burlesque scene. They had on display, including her fake leg.
Hey, that's kind of cool.
So, like, I mean, and you can see that like Armie Hammer is considerably taller than Depp, and. And all of that. I mean, so that was kind of cool to see, and it was a lot of detail in Helen's costume. And I want to say that the little placard there said that it was made by some Oscar-nominated person. And but I mean, all the costumes looked really good.
That's good. I mean, that leg looks really intricate on film. I mean, I could only imagine seeing it in person.
Yeah, and I almost wanted to see her be a badass with it. You know, like take ownership of having. This prosthetic leg, but still, I mean, obviously she's not allowing it to take her femininity, her sense of self away. Really, yeah,
she's still Big Mama. She's still the, you know, the head goose in charge.
Yeah, I guess you could argue that's, I don't know how much better of a lifestyle that is, because she's just a professional whore and she's managing other whores. But
I mean, that's the oldest business there is. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the Kardashians, and that's all their mom's doing with them, right?
It's essentially the same thing. I think they went to the Kardashian mother. What's her name? Kris Jenner, right? I think they went to her to get some advice to give to Helena Bonham Carter, just to round out her character a little bit more, you know, make it real.
So yeah. But I guess all in all, just go watch the Lone Ranger.
Go check it out. It's worth a check out, especially if you know what I'm going to say. If and when it hits Netflix, check it out. That's when you check it out.
You know, I'd say that if you were to pay a matinee, you wouldn't, or even if you went to dollar theater, you wouldn't regret it.
Okay, yeah, I say dollar theater.
Yeah.
I'll say dollar theater. I don't know how great of a rating that is.
I don't know how great of a rating that is either. I'd say, you know, bargain bin at Walmart. You know, we just find it at the very bottom, and it's right next to Bloodsuckers 3. Yeah, just pick that up.
Bloodsuckers 3 and Megafish.
Megafish. And Transmorphers.
Transmorphers.
Have you seen that? That's real.
That's a real thing?
Yeah, I saw it at, I think it was on Netflix.
Wow.
Yeah, and I didn't even try and watch that shit.
You shouldn't. I don't know why. I don't know why you even try.
And like it's funny because they bring out a new one with every Transformers movie that comes out. Like it's on Netflix like immediately. Like it, of course, like it's corresponds with the release of that current Transformers movie.
See, now you know what this tells us? Mikey G, we're doing something wrong, because these people are putting out product, and it's like they've made multiple ones. That means somebody, there's a market for it. Netflix is buying it. Somebody's watching these things. These things are getting greenlit. How is this happening?
Well, someone's sucking dick somewhere, and I'm just not willing to do it yet.
You point me in the direction, and it'll get done if I'm going to get a movie deal and some Netflix playing on there, man.
Yeah, I got my knee pads encased in glass, and it says break in case of emergency.
I got mine in my trunk of my car just in case I run up on somebody in the street who's got the right connection.
Oh, man.
Because you never know.
Fuck.
I even got that memory foam in the knee pads, but that's a different story. I don't want to get into that. That's a whole nother podcast, but it's comfortable if you. Yeah, but anyway. wait, real quick, I gotta say this too. I was thinking about this, and this is my own little aesthetic that bothered me about the film. And I know that Johnny Depp is getting up there in age, but I don't think that he decided to work out for this movie at all. I think his shirt was off the entire movie. Like, Johnny, your shirt's going to be off the entire movie. Are you cool? No, we'll put a plate on my chest. It'll make my hair really long. Yeah, but I mean, and we'll pull up the pants past, like, up to my nipples. That way you don't have to really see my belly. Yeah, but you're kind of flabby. I mean, if you just want to hit the gym, he's like, hey, I made billions of dollars for Disney with the Pirates franchise. You're really going to tell me to work out right now? And they said, fair enough. You can do whatever you want. And so I think they made every other Indian that you saw kind of flabby. It's like, wait a minute. These people who are living off the land, who have no processed foods, who don't have any salt intake, why are they all so flabby and out of shape? What's that about?
I didn't notice that at all.
Well, I sure did. I was looking at every person that was a Native American that was portrayed on there was, like, out of shape. And I was like, how? How is this possible? Well, that's just me. That bothered me.
We'll let that plane fly by.
We'll get that in post.
You know, I didn't notice that. That didn't even bother me at all. I mean, I see what you're saying, but that just didn't bother me. I was looking at other things in the movie.
I was just one of many things that I was taking a gander at, you know? I just wanted to be put in that world. And that's the thing, I don't know, just the Johnny Depp. Plus, I have a personal thing. I always look for this, especially when I get aging actors that I adore in films. I always take a look at their bodies and see what they're doing. And somebody who never disappoints, and I mean never disappoints, is Tom Cruise. He's always in tip-top shape. I think he's 75 years old. Doesn't have any stretchy hanging skin. He's got like an 18-pack. He makes me look like a fool. He makes me look like, I don't know, Kevin Smith or something. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, well, it's all that gay sex. It really keeps you in, shape.
Hey, man, if that's the secret, I don't knock it. Whatever's keeping you in shape that doesn't involve throwing up after meals, I'm all for it.
Well, Tom doesn't look like he's a spitter. He looks like he swallows everything that's given to him.
Well, you know, to each his own. I don't judge.
So moving on, moving on.
Now that's their business.
So,
I say love is love.
Yes, I don't dispute that. I voted no on 8. So. We live out here in California. For anyone that's not listening in California, that's Prop 8. That was a reference to Prop 8, which was just overturned, which I think is great.
Hallelujah! We're getting married! Woo!
Man, like, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but some folks, like, you know how you have those people on Facebook that you're just like, man, like, just shut up. Like I will... Like, you have to, like, fight with yourself as to why you just haven't deleted them as friends.
Yeah, I think that's most of the people on Facebook.
Like just saying the most ignorant shit. Like, when that was coming out, I had this one friend, and I'll give him this. Like, he was very articulate when he was going through and saying his points as to why he felt gay marriage was a sin and all that. Like, he didn't curse, he wasn't using slang, or he wasn't... slandering anyone, but basically what he said was, you know, if, you know, people think that just because you think that homosexuality is a sin, that you don't love people that are homosexuals. He said that's not true, but if you're going to say that, condone the sin and say that it's right for a man to love another man, a woman to love another woman, like, what's going to stop you from the next step of legalizing incest or legalizing someone that loves their cat and wants to marry their cat? So basically, like, equating homosexuality with abnormal behavior with, you know, there are people that are like that, but it's a very small percentage. But just saying that it's that all these people are basically freaks.
Yeah,
you know, and it was like I almost like, quote, you know, put something on a status from like, that's gonna open up a can of worms, and he had all his conservative Christian friends patting him on the back. So I was like, you know what, all right, I'm just not gonna say anything, because clearly, like, that's they're not even, you're talking amongst deaf ears at that point.
Yeah, that's an uphill battle, and that's the thing with Facebook that I'm going to have to 100% agree with you on. Facebook is this nice little bubble where you could say anything, and hopefully you do have friends on there that'll back you up, and it's fantastic. But nobody will really call you out because they don't want that any kind of backlash, you know what I mean? So it's just like this venue for people to just go on out and say whatever's on their mind, regardless of how ignorant it is or unbacked up by, I don't know, truth or facts. And they're just going to go out and say what's on the top of the noggin there. And I guess it's a beautiful and a horrible thing.
Yeah, and, you know, and at the same time, it's like... I mean, there's a lot of stuff on Facebook that I just don't want to look at, you know, or even hear, you know, like you got those poor bastards that are like, and it's not funny, you know, and I'm an asshole, and I'll be first to say that I'm just a dick for thinking that this is funny at all. But like when people just insist on putting every misfortune on their life.
I knew that was coming, yeah.
On Facebook. And it's like, there's never anything that's... You know those people I'm talking about, man. Like,
I could name some specifically that I know we both have mutual friends of, but I won't do it. But yeah, it is. It's sad, and then it's even more sad when, like, because you don't know what to do when somebody posts misfortune, like, oh, lost another lung. I guess maybe hopefully the next one won't bail out on me, and then people like it. Like, wait, what? Are you supposed to like that? Are you supposed to comment and just say, oh, feel better? Are you, like, what kind of attention are you seeking to gain from that? You know what I mean?
I always like those statuses just out of irony.
Well, yeah, but how are they, like, the person who posted it, are they searching for likes or just searching for comments?
Well, both. Well, they're not searching for likes. They just want people to comment and say, oh, are you okay? Oh, are you all right? What can I do to help you?
Yeah, what can I do?
You know.
I want to be a part of that. Yeah, there's, especially, you know, I'm going to do, we're working on the name misogyny, and it's keeping it real, so I'm about to keep it real. But the bigger ladies who post when they don't get dates, or, oh, I guess it's just going to be me again this Saturday night. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Oh, I haven't seen those. Those are sad.
Oh, you haven't seen those? I get a lot of those. I mean, not personally sent to me, but I see that a lot. Maybe I just befriend the unbefriendables, but... I get a lot of, oh, alone again on Saturday night, or I guess he wasn't interested, or science.
I guess he wasn't interested.
You know, it's like maybe he'll call back, stuff like that.
Oh, it's that really, is so sad.
It is sad, and it's even worse when people like it. Like,
like it. Assholes like me that just click like.
I feel bad, and I just try to scroll through it quickly so I get on to the next thing. So I get on to baby pictures, because we're getting at that age where our friends are just having babies.
Yeah, and that, you know, I know some people get annoyed with that on Facebook. I don't so much, because I actually like the fact that my friends are, you know, having families, and the families are growing, and I like, you know, just overall, I like seeing my friends do well. And so I think that's why it's such a departure for me to see people not doing well, because it's like my whole stance is if you're not doing well, then change it. Like, don't bitch about how you're not doing well.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to stop you from – no one's going to help you from not doing well. They'll help you if you're willing to help yourself. But don't just bitch and talk about how you can't get a date Saturday night. Well, how about you just get some friends together and just go out and just have a good time and don't worry about whether or not he's going to call back or she's going to call back or, you know, or whatever.
That's a very, very good point to make. But I think in order to do that, in order to call up some friends, I think you gotta have some real ones first.
Yeah, that's step one. That's really step one.
That would help. It would definitely help out the process. Oh, I'm a horrible person.
You know, like, I won't say that I like doing this, but one thing that, like, I see a lot of on Facebook, and this is a generational thing. Well, I think every generation has had this, but, you know, you have those group of friends that are women, and they always got that one fat or ugly friend. And, like, you know, I have friends that are very attractive, you know, and they always got, like, it's either a fat cousin or a fat little sister or whatever. And they're in, like, so you watch them clubbing and, you know, all my hot friends are dressed like, you know, in their sexy little outfits. Some, you know, a little bit more slutty than, you know, for lack of a better term, than others.
Yeah, a little more scantily clad.
Yeah, and they're, like, in a you know, in, like, rain, you know, or LAX in Vegas or whatever. And then they got their one fat friend. And it's just like, like their fat friend's trying to do what they're doing, which is basically just put on a baby tee and then hit the club. And yeah. It's like,
See, yeah, you, there's, yeah, and see, I think that that big friend is around for one of two reasons. A, I think it makes the skinny girls feel good about themselves in two different ways. One, like they're helping out charity. Like, hey, we're going to take this big girl and let her hang out among the high class, like the society. Like, we're hot. And we're going to let her experience what it's like to hang out with hot chicks. And by comparison, it makes them look even better. So it's just an all-around win-win for the pretty girls in this situation.
Yeah, and like any guy that approaches any of those girls, like he might as well just Now that I've thought it out in my head, it sounds fucked up. But I was gonna say, you know, like he might as well just multiply his tab by four. And I didn't mean like because he has to literally like get more liquid for the big one. What I meant was, if there's you know, three hot chicks and you're trying to talk to all three, and they got their one friend that's not, you know, on the same scale as them or whatever, then you have to, you know, to be cordial, you have to buy them all drinks. Yeah. Or they're going to expect that of you.
But see, I mean, at the same token, I mean, the point that you made before, I mean, you say you're kind of brushing by it, but I mean, let's face it, big girls have more mass, so they're going to need to take a little bit more alcohol to feel a little bit better. And if you're trying to win her over, maybe it's not a bad thing if you buy her a few more drinks just to let that, you know, the alcohol seep in there.
Oh, man. I'm just going to move on because...
Keep it real.
We got to keep it real. But you know what?
There's no hate here. This is nothing but love. We're just saying this is the world as we see it. It'll help some others. Maybe it will hurt some others. But hey, it is out there for people to grasp onto and take it into consideration.
But you know what? I like thick girls, so I can't even. I don't like fat girls. Like, I like girls with a thick.
Talking about thick girls. Thick girls. There's nothing wrong with a thick lady. We're talking about big girls. So don't even confuse the two.
when the thick lady, because there's sometimes that fine line, you know, like the thick lady, just, you know, she could gain 10 pounds and be considered fat.
That's true. It's a watch. You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking about creating an app that girls can have on their phones and senses due to, like, whenever they use the phone, it'll sense the breath patterns and pick up what they've eaten on their phones.
Oh.
So that way it could tell him, oh, you're like one cheeseburger away from becoming a big girl. You better stay thick and put that cheeseburger down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it'll help. I'm just, you know, it's something that we should look into.
All right, let's do it.
Get funded by DARPA or NASA or some science organization.
So, you know, we'll talk. We have our that video that you sent. We got to talk about that. But before we get to that, you know, let's touch real quick on Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And tell me what you thought about Man of Steel.
Man of Steel. Man of Steel. Well, again, I think this is a trend that I've seen personally in the movies that I've seen. This movie looks awesome. You know, the look of it looks great. I think the effects are pretty good. It's well acted, but again, it suffers from a few of the same things that felt Lone Ranger suffered from. I felt it was a little long at points. You know, let me back on up. I did love where they took it. We've never seen Superman in a few of the ways that we saw him in this movie. I am going to say it's probably still the best Superman movie as opposed to the capturing the action. The look of it was great, but feeling-wise... You're not going to match up to the Donner, the 1978 Donner Superman. It's just not going to happen. That's the problem that I had with the movie. I just didn't feel for it. It looked great, but I felt like there was no heart, and that was the problem with Man of Steel.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that it's really hard to top Terrence Stamp as General Zod. I mean, Michael Shannon's General Zod is very different from what Terrence Stamp had to do. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. Coming in, it more or less, it gave me everything that, that I wanted from the movie. I mean, the biggest complaints I had about it was what they did with Lois Lane. I thought everything that they did with her was just ridiculous.
Well, how she was conveniently everywhere the plot needed her to be?
Yeah, I mean, clearly she had the same super speed that Superman had.
She was everywhere.
Because she was literally everywhere. You know, I was, like, as soon as, like, Superman snaps Zod's neck, I almost expected Lois Lane to fly in outer space and reverse the direction of Earth and reverse time and then stop everything.
So we actually don't know. We didn't get to see Lois's origin story. Maybe her and Clark get along so well and why they fell in love so quickly in this movie is because she's from an alien planet, too. Who knows?
Yeah, that could be it.
And it would explain how she could zip and be in one place and then half across the world in a matter of, I don't know, a couple hours.
Yeah.
It would explain some things, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't like how we don't see Clark Kent, like the Clark Kent that we know with glasses and the Daily Planet and all that, until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like that really bothered me. It was like, oh, come on. Like that, I don't know, like that just really bothered me.
See, yeah, I don't like to, they tacked it on, it was almost like, oh yeah, I forgot about the whole Clark Kent thing, let's put that at the end. And it felt so, like, hodgepodge together, because this ending that should have had so much impact, like, look at Metropolis, it is destroyed, it will never be the same. We have this hero now, like, aliens are now here. Whoa, the world will be forever changed. And it kind of leaves on this very serious note, all this destruction. And then we have a scene where, you know, this is spoilers, guys, sorry. The satellite comes down, boom, crashing down in front of the Obama lookalike general guy. And then he's like, hey, you can't be watching me. I'll do the protecting. You just sit by the sidelines, and that's our deal. And then he flies off, and it's like, okay, so this is serious in case Superman is the savior, but he is not going to play by... He's playing by his own rules, essentially. And then the movie ends with, oh, yeah, that's right. There's the Clark Kent that you guys know. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
And it waves. It's like, wait, what? What just happened? How am I supposed to feel? Am I happy that, oh, this is the Clark Kent that we know? Everything's going back to the way we know it? Or that, you know, the world is forever changed because of this horrible, devastating alien attack? You know?
Yeah, I think the and we got to get Kentucky Ken. I would love to do a podcast with just him, and just because he loves the Donner Superman, and he hated this Superman. He hated it, and everything that he says, you know, they're all valid points. But I was able to look past it. But you know, I guess, you know, like since I'm just a Batman fan, there's so much that, like, I could care less what they do with Superman. So I was just happy to see a new Superman movie at all. But, you know, I mean, all the criticism that are out there of the film, I agree with. Like, for example, you never really get a good sense of, like, who Clark is.
Yeah.
At all. And,
he's very brooding. He's almost, I mean, I hate to say it, but he's almost like, what's that dude from the Twilight? Like, Edward from Twilight? He just kind of broods. He goes around, like, staring and looking really serious. And then he just, you know, and then, he'll, but unlike Edward, then he'll just punch the crap out of Zod.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much what we get to see him, like, angsty and then angry, and that's about it.
Yeah, and it was I didn't get that. I didn't understand why they did that with him. I didn't like what they did with Kevin Costner as his Earth dad. I mean, I know it sounds like I'm just like tearing the movie apart, and I said I liked it. I did like it. But there are certain things that they could have tightened and made stronger overall.
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at the Donner cut, I mean, one of the best scenes in the whole movie that kind of sums up, like, what Superman's all about in one, you know, in one full swoop, you know, no pun intended, was in the first Donner movie, when his Earth dad has a heart attack, and at his Earth dad's funeral, he says to his mom, you know, I have all these powers, but I couldn't save him.
Right.
Which means, you know, I mean, Superman is not here to save all of us. Just like, you know, and I know Christians, you know, may or may not like this, this comparison, but, you know, just like Jesus Christ wasn't here to literally save all of us, but to be an example for the greatness that we have in all of ourselves. And, I thought they kind of missed that beat a little bit.
I definitely agree, yeah.
Because
like you said, in that interpretation, when he lost his father, it was something that was out of his hands. It was something that all his strength couldn't prevent or stop, you know what I mean? And in this one, I think that's where you're getting at, It seemed like he very well could have prevented his father's death. The father just wanted to go or something. I'm still not sure why that happened the way it happened. I thought his death in this movie was very weak.
Yeah, because, you know, what would have been more effective is if they had established his relationship with his dad, and his dad not so much discouraging him from outing himself, but really teaching him to be a man and do what's right. And doing what's right is not so much just hiding who you are and, you know, because people are going to want to dissect you or anything, but, like, why shouldn't you hit that kid that bullied you?
Yeah.
Like, why shouldn't you, like, you could kill him by just looking at him. Like, why shouldn't he do that? And I felt like with the flashbacks, they should have really kind of dealt with that. His dad teaching him different lessons throughout his life as to how he should use his powers. You know, like, but still kind of, like, walking that fine line of, like, not telling him what to do, just kind of leading him along the path. And so, I mean, the only path he let him down was that just, you should, you know, if you're in a bus that goes in water, just let everybody die. Because that's going to be more convenient for you, because then you won't have to answer questions. You'll just be the lucky one that got out. And there's no witnesses. You know what I mean? That's basically, like, what he told his son.
That's true. But save the pets. Save a dog anytime you can.
Yeah, and you know what? That dog should not have been... that should have been a little girl.
Yes, exactly. Why are you going back for a dog, bro? What's going on? It's a tornado. Do you want to die?
So that whole aspect of the movie didn't even work. But one thing that I did really enjoy in this film, that I thought this film did, you know, great, was the superhero action. I thought
most definitely.
I thought that the action that was in this, you had never seen action in the air quite like this. Even I thought it was even a little better than what they did in the Iron Man movies. In terms, you know, and Snyder does what he does with the camera. And the way that he shot Flight, I thought was really cool.
A little bit of that shaky cam to kind of get, like, grounded in reality, I felt. Almost as if, like, when he was really far away, it was almost like, whoa, like, I was filming something else. I just happened to catch this thing zooming in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like that was very effective.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I think is the most disappointing about, you know, this movie is that you look at, you know, the mythos of Superman and all the different ways they could have restarted his origin and rebooted it and all that, and the people that are involved in the movie, and the story was done by David S. Goyer and Christopher Nolan, and everything that's in Superman's mythos, they decided to tell this story. I thought that was very disappointing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Nolan just doesn't think that Superman is just as interesting a character as Batman, or he just doesn't love the character as much, or he's too busy, or I don't know what it is, but...
What I think happened is I don't think he volunteered or really wanted to be a part of this project whatsoever. I feel WB was like, look, you created this franchise. We don't know really how you did it or what you did with Batman, but we love it. We're going to pay you a ton of money. Please, just do something. We'll give so much money towards your next project, cough, cough, Interstellar, that you can do whatever you want. We'll stay out of your hair. Just please, just put your name on this film so we have a little bit of credibility.
Yeah.
And he was so busy counting his money, he's like, 1, 2, 3. Oh, I'm sorry, what was that? Yeah, sure, I'll do it, whatever.
Yeah.
And he came in, like, maybe out of the 9-month pre-production process, he was probably in the office a couple of hours on 3 different days saying, yes, 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 no, yes, no, and I'm gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie kind of shows that, if that was the case.
Yeah, it's what it feels like to me. But I do have a question, though. This is not really about Christopher Nolan. But this bothered me. Again, I noticed weird things, I suppose. He got this suit. I think that's a little convoluted. That the ship that he found his suit in... Kal-El, this is, he found the Superman suit that we know to be the Superman suit, and it was supposed to be, was that waiting for him? Did Jor-El send that, like, in one day, you'll wear this suit, or you should wear this suit, or how did he know that suit was for him? How did he know it would fit him? Do the clothes on Krypton just magically form to your body? And also, we see everybody, like, on Krypton kind of wearing that, like, a jumper type thing. So it's like, okay, that's what they wear on their planet. But still, on top of it, they layer it with, like, armor or, like, or other types of adornments. That's essentially, like, underwear. Like, you're just wearing Under Armour underneath all of your clothes. So he's just still wearing his underwear and a cape flying around, as far as he knows.
Right. I think that the way that because Jor-El said that was an old scout ship, and, you know, it had been there a while. I think that as soon as Superman placed in his, you know, his Superman key.
Right. Right. His all-powerful Superman
key. Yeah, you know, as soon as he put in his Superman key, and Jor-El was in the ship, you know, the computer interface that is Jor-El was in the ship. I think that it was being built while he was explaining the history of Krypton for him, because he had built that into the key, that whenever he puts it into a ship, you know, wherever he finds it, that it would create this for him. So I don't think his suit had been there for 20,000 years. I think that it literally was being built while he was being taught a history lesson.
So even with the advanced science and mechanics that I probably can't even fathom, I'm not even a science major, but how did it know his specifications to fit him?
I don't know if those robots, you know, read it and then they interpreted. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question.
And that's some impressive technology that you can essentially have your consciousness and you can interact with real world. It's not because, like, it took a leap from, you know, the Brandow kind of got messages. You know, he kind of got messages. That Superman, he got messages from his dad, kind of like pre-recorded things. But this Jor-El could, like, interact and then learn new information and then process that in the way that Jor-El would. Like, that's some high-tech stuff right there.
Yeah, and, like, even some of the scenes, it was, like, they added lines, like day of, because they forgot that. like there's a scene where, like, I almost feel like the actors, like, put that in there because they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We'll just keep it in. Oh, thanks so much, Michael Shannon. Thank you. Saved us. Like, there's a scene where, like, you know, like, Jor-El's, and I think Russell Crowe, I don't think anyone told Russell Crowe that his character died.
I don't think so either, yeah.
I think that literally he came to set every day and they're like, we're just going to shoot him in scenes. We may not use everything that we shoot, but we can't tell him that Jor-El dies. Like, he didn't know the story of Superman at all. Like, he just thought that literally, like, he was with, like, he thought it was like a buddy cop movie. And he showed up every day.
Father and saving the world?
Yeah, like, he thought it was just a fun father-son story, and he really loved the new interpretation that they were doing. And during the production meeting, he's like, you know, I really like what you guys are doing here, because I read the script, and I remember that in Richard Donner's version, Marlon Brando dies, and I don't want to die in this movie. And nobody said anything, because he signed for a reduced rate.
So, like, oh, that sounds great, Russell.
Because there's a scene where, like...
Yeah, I know the scene you're talking about, what's it called? He's trying to turn Zod around, right? And Zod's like, you're Jor-El, you have all of his memories, all of his feelings, and, like, I'm going to build the new Krypton on top of your son's bones. And that's the scene you're talking about, right?
Yeah, and he's like, I'm arguing the merits with a ghost.
Yeah. Yes, he had to spell it out for the audience, just because, I think, yeah, the audience was like, wait, what? What's happening?
Yeah, like, why are you talking, why are you trying to talk to this computer program?
Exactly. And how long does it take for, like, this, again, this is advanced technology, so I don't know, but it had to be, like, de-encrypted, if that's even a word, or, like, deprogrammed to get the Jor-El's files out of the system. So that took a second, enough of them to have this dialogue, and then it, right on cue, he disappears.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's Krypton tech that I'm clearly, it just goes above my head.
Well, we might have to do a commentary when it gets on DVD.
You know what? I'm almost 100% into that.
So, I've seen it twice, and I liked it a lot better the first time than I did the second. Because the second time I was just like, I just want to get to the action.
I've seen it two times fully, and then working at the place that I work, I've walked in and seen pieces of it, and it just feels like, you see, I really love the beginning stuff. Spoilers, Krypton, everything on Krypton is fantastic. Then it slows down, and then Zod comes back to Earth, and you're like, yeah, all right, now I'm in it again. I'm in it to win it.
Yeah.
And there's so many flashbacks. I mean, I know that's part of how they're telling the story, but instead of, like, I feel when you do the flashback to tell a story, every flashback should provide you with a little informational nugget where you get a little bit more of that character. You're like, yeah, I'm glad I knew that. I can't wait for the next flashback because I get to know a little bit more. I feel like I'm getting to know this guy. When this one, I just wanted to roll my eyes because it was the same message every time. It was like, you know, you are here for good. You can be good. You can be good. You can be. But just be careful. Be really careful. But you can be good if you choose to be. Like, okay, I get it. Show us something else, you know?
Like, the last flashback they had, I felt they could have cut out completely. When, like, those kids push him down, and...
Oh, yeah.
His dad's like, did you want to fight him? And it's like, what? Like, we already get what you're trying to tell your kid. Like, just go back to the main story.
See, they needed that because they had to redeem the fat redheaded kid, because we're going to see him again being the manager at the product place. I'm sorry, the IHOP. Later, so, and then that too. I thought that was going to be set up for like a nice little joke, almost like the Batman in Batman Begins, where he gives a coat to the homeless guy, and then he becomes Batman, and then Batman sees him, and he's like, "Nice coat," and he flies, or you know, jumps up with the Tom Wilkinson character. I thought it was going to be something like that. So when Superman crashed through the IHOP, I was like, "Oh, we're going to see the redhead ginger kid."
Yeah,
and they see each other, I guess, but. There's, like, no recognition. It's just like, yep, that's the kid. That's the IHOP that he works at. The end. Oh, okay.
And I kind of felt like this fell into the traps of the old Batman movies, which is way too many people know who the main, like, the alter ego.
Yeah.
Like, who in Smallville didn't know that Clark is Superman?
Yeah, it's so true.
Like, with what's established in this movie, like, literally everyone was speculating that this guy is weird. And when someone comes out, you know, when it comes out that there's aliens that can do all these fantastic things, who in Smallville didn't think, oh, that's probably Clark Kent?
Yeah, I don't know. Unless they're trying to say that everybody in Smallville just ain't too bright. Because, especially, like, I don't know, when he starts writing, he's writing under Clark Kent, which is where... You know, that's what he was known as in Smallville. So once he is a journalist at the Metropolis newspaper, and from what I gather, like, Smallville is like a runoff of Metropolis. That's like the closest big city. So they're going to pick up the paper and be like, oh, Clark Kent, wait, why is he doing all these Superman stories? Wait a minute, he is Superman. Like, and no one's, especially with social media, no one's going to come out and say, like, hey, wait a minute. That's the same guy. Just put on glasses.
Yeah, but in the comics, though, like, Clark never covered Superman. It was really Lois.
Oh, it was all Lois?
Yeah, like, it's... from all the comics of his, of Superman that I've read, like, he never covers himself. Like, Lois is always doing that. And she's always doing the exclusive interviews and all of that. Like, Clark is always talking about the surrounding stuff, you know, and doing LexCorp research and all of that. But, he never, like, reports on Superman himself.
You know. I'm glad you said that. So what do you feel about the sequel? I mean, it's got to have Lex Luthor in it, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
I'm scared about what they're going to do with Luthor, though. I mean, like, I don't know... I mean,
I'll tell you how I want him. Can I tell you how I want him?
Yeah.
I want him to be like he is in the animated series and the Justice League series. He's like... He's a big, imposing force. He's not like a thin guy, or he's not like a Kevin Spacey. He's all intellectual. He's like muscular. Of course, he's not going to compete with Superman in strength, but you know, he's physically impressive, and he's also mentally impressive. He's got this intellect. He's just this very cool about everything businessman. He never bats an eye when something like could be really negative. Like, no, of course he's got people for that.
Yeah.
You know, he could spin anything in any way that he needs to. And something that I think would be great in the movie, in the sequel, if he's in it, is, you know, he has to rebuild this city because because of these alien attacks, and he's not quite sure what to think of this Superman. And he's going to, you know, build his image up in the face of the people of Metropolis. And so, like, Superman will have to look into it, and another billionaire will have to look into it, Bruce Wayne. But it's Batman, and that's why Batman will have to do some snooping in Metropolis, and maybe, just maybe, he'll run into Superman. They'll have to take down something together. I'm thinking Batman should be in the next Man of Steel movie. That's what I'm thinking.
I would agree, but I almost want... I agree with all of that, but the only thing that I would change is I would want Batman at the very end of that.
Okay, I could see that.
Like, just like, you know, like, have, like, allow, like, Superman to have his time with Luthor and establish, like, why that's a, you know, why they're, you know, why that's his arch nemesis and all of that. And him take care of Luthor and fight whatever, you know, robots Luthor sends at him. Or maybe even, I mean, I really like this. I thought they did a great job with Metallo in the animated series. And even, yeah, you know, even have maybe Metallo as, like, his hired hand. And the only reason I say Batman at the end of that is because then you could set that up for a Batman Superman movie to where, you know, like, let's say, like, you know, Superman, you know, defeats Luthor and whatever he's doing. And then at the very end of it, like, Batman approaches him and says, there's something else we need to take care of. And then, you know, whatever the next step is, and maybe it's, you know, something that's happening and something else that's happening in Metropolis, maybe with Brainiac or something like that. But establishing, like, the Batman-Superman dynamic and relationship in a Batman-Superman movie. And you could still have it under the guise of another installment of the Man of Steel movie, but it would really be Batman-Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because I feel like if you introduce Batman in the second movie, that's like, too much, because they didn't do everything right this first installment of Superman. They have to go back and kind of do some makeup work and establish him as a hero and as someone that, you know, is truth, justice in the American way, even though they never say that in the movie, and establish all of that, and then introduce, like, okay, well, this is Batman, and this is why these guys are different, and you can establish who Batman is in this universe, and then naturally after that, you would do the Justice League movie. But I feel like they're going to do a Justice League movie in the next 3 years. Like, they're not even going to do it right. Like, they're just going to be impatient, and just there's going to be a lot of characters in the Justice League movie we're going to see for the very first time that they're just going to put in there.
It's going to be a jumbled mess. It's I don't know. It's a little depressing. I don't see that. If it happens, I doubt it'll be a good movie.
No, I anticipate it being an awful movie, just because they're not doing the work to make it good. I mean, because what they really should have done, really, was the first movie, the first step into that should have been the Green Lantern.
Yep.
That should have been the first step into doing that. And if they had done that correctly, they'd done that right. Because I actually liked Ryan Reynolds as the Green Lantern. I thought he did a good job. And I thought, like, his quips and his personality, he made Hal Jordan his character, and I thought it worked, but it was just the movie itself was awful. So he wasn't necessarily bad in it, but the movie was bad. So that should have been
horrible.
So that should have been, you know, a step into doing a Justice League movie. Then you have Man of Steel, and you establish Superman, and, you know, then you could have had Hal Jordan at the end of this movie, like at the end of the credits, maybe helping clean up Metropolis, and then, you know, and talk to Superman, say, hey, you know, I just wanted to meet you. And then, you do the next installment of Man of Steel, you do the whole Luthor thing. At the end of it, you know, you establish that there's a Batman in this universe. Next installment of Man of Steel is a Batman-Superman movie, where they do their thing, you know, maybe against Brainiac or whatever. And then, in between the Batman-Superman movie, like, you know, bookended at the beginning and the end, a Flash movie and a Wonder Woman movie, and then after that, then do the Justice League movie.
I gotta back you up there, man. I don't know how I feel about a movie all about Flash. I could see a movie all about Wonder Woman, But I don't know if I want to sit through an hour and a half to two, probably, you know, with superhero movies now, they've been going for the two hours and 30-minute mark. I don't know if I want to see that with The Flash. I don't know what story they could tell where I'd be that involved with whatever The Flash is going through personally.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but, and I don't even know the character all that well, but, you know, he is kind of like the Tony Stark of the Justice League, where, you know, he's a quick wit and all that. I feel like if you get an actor that can portray him effectively and just be fun to watch him as The Flash, then they can get around a lot of story things with that. But, like I said, I don't know anything in his mythos that would even warrant doing that correctly. So I don't even know with him.
And like, who would his villain be that anybody would care about?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, who's the other guy? Is it
Captain Cold or something, right, is one of his, and then Gorilla Grodd or Gorilla Zod? Gorilla Grodd is his two main villains, right?
Who's a Yellow Flash? Who's that? Is that reverse?
What's his name? Oh, man, that's horrible. I'm going to look it up right now. What's his name? It's not Quickster.
But they could skip a Flash movie and just go, you know, into a Wonder Woman movie and establish her because she's a prominent character, and then
Professor Zoom. Sorry, that's his name.
Oh, that's awful. But
yeah, there have been better names. Not gonna lie.
But you know, but I don't see Warner Brothers doing any of that. I think they're gonna rush all that stuff, and then you're gonna have a movie that's gonna be the poor man's Avengers.
Yeah.
And, I hope that Avengers 2 is good, because you keep reading all this. Have you heard about this Quicksilver, how there's two Quicksilvers?
Yes, it seems horrible. Like, come on, guys. At first I was excited, because I was like, oh, they're going to find their way around, like, bridging the universes, but no, that's not what they're doing. They're completely separate.
Yeah, which is fucking stupid. Like, as a comic book fan, like, I want to see Wolverine and Spider-Man in an Avengers movie.
Exactly.
Like just fucking do it.
Make it happen.
You know, like not Heath Ledger, Wolverine, what's his name?
Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman. He's not getting any younger. You know?
He really isn't. And especially this character who's not supposed to age.
Yeah, and he's having I know that it's harder and harder for him to come back in shape for these movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so... Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, it's like, you know, you look at Disney, it's like, you know, do we want to make $1.5 billion off Avengers 2, or do we want to make $500 million and split the other half with these guys? So.
Exactly.
I mean, that's really what it is. So, but anyway. Anyway, moving on.
I think we should probably talk about the video.
I didn't get chances to see all of it, but what I did see was that fucking flying car.
Yeah, right? That's a concept car that was a contest that Volkswagen was doing to see what the next level of vehicle would be, automobile, where the automobile can go into the future. And it's a concept car, and it's pretty fantastic.
Well, I wish that there was an actual prototype that would be operational and it would work, because it seems like a great idea. I mean, basically, I'll try and find a way to put this on a website or something. I'll try and get us a website so we can send links so people can look at it. But it's a like imagine, for those that are listening, like just imagine the hoverboard in Back to the Future 2, but for like a Scion IQ, and that's basically what this car is. Like,
yeah.
You know, no wheels and a Scion IQ and same size, but it's floating like, you know, like a hoverboard would. And in the video, they demo, like, the technology of a, I don't know what it is, inside, like, a courtyard. It's like these squares that are coming together, and they're just floating in the air.
Oh, yeah, those, I forgot what that was called. I should really have this written down. I forgot what that was called, but it was like this material that's filled with helium, and then it just kind of moves on its own based off of its own inertia. It's pretty intense. But the car, in order for the car to work in real world, I think they would have to have some sort of, I think it works off of magnets.
Mm.
And so they would have to, all the roads would have to be, have, you know, retrofitted with some sort of magnet for it to bounce off on. So that's what creates the hover effect.
Mm.
This is cutting edge science stuff that we're very capable of talking about.
Yeah, I know, right?
And creating ourselves.
What else was on that video?
There's that. The name of those videos, it's Vsauce 2, for anybody who wants to look this up. Vsauce, V and sauce, and then the number 2. And type that into YouTube, and the show is called Mind Blown, or Mind Blow. There's no N on the end of blown. And it's fantastic. They go into all kinds of cutting-edge science stuff. So I've seen a whole bunch. They're all really short. There's really short bites of cool science-type things. And the videos themselves are like 5 minutes long, but they don't focus too long on anything, so you just get a wide variety. So I kind of forget what else was on that specific video, but I know that they, on a different one, they had, on that one, they had a bra. This is for the ladies, or some of the dudes, you know, I don't judge. But it's a bra that can hold different things. It has a pocket in it, right underneath the arm flap, so if you need to keep your cell phone in there, it's a big enough pocket for like an iPhone. Or if you need to keep your credit cards or some money. Or, you know, if you're that kind of lady, some condoms. It doesn't matter. It's just a pocket. I don't care what you put in it. It's in your bra. It's fantastic.
But women already do that, though.
See, well, they put it in the titty cleavage, if you will. This is like, you don't have to use, it doesn't get sweaty by your, you know, by your teats. You don't have to worry about teat sweat. I guess you have to worry about underarm sweat because it is right underneath the arm there. So I guess sweat is still a problem. It is covered up in a nice little mesh, a little nylon mesh. So maybe that protects from wetness. I don't know. I haven't tested it myself, but it looks neat.
How much are one of these going for?
You know, I don't know. Last time I went bra shopping was a few years ago, so I'm sure the rates have gone up since then. So I'm going to say at least $50.
That's not bad, because bras are fucking $50, man.
Yeah, they're bras are expensive. I don't know how you girls do it. That's why you wear the same ones over and over again, huh?
Nasty sluts.
Could you imagine if we wore the same underwear, you know, for like months at a time?
Yeah, and when girls don't wear months at a time, but they, you know, they have their core bras, and then they wash those.
I'm underqualified to talk about bras.
I'm underqualified too. I mean, I went into a store with my girlfriend, and I won't say what size she is because that's, you know, just embarrassing for her, but not for me. It makes me feel like a stud. But but like these fucking bras were like $50+, and I was like, God damn! And she's like, I need to get a new bra. And this is 50, you know, this is whatever the price was. It was over $50. And I was like, damn.
Yeah. I mean, and like you were saying with the movie theaters, you know, with the arc light, if you want that extra experience, you're going to pay that extra money for the, you know, the better quality of theater. I feel like that's the same way for bras as well. You know, if you want a better bra, it's going to be nice. It's going to be cushy. I know bras do different things. If you want to like pump them up or separate them, I'm sure there's different costs for that as well.
I feel bad for the ladies that are, like, really top-heavy, like, you know, triple Ds and stuff. Because there's only, like, basically one type of bra for those, and those are not pretty bras. So those girls don't feel too attractive.
It's like the equivalent of granny panties and a bra.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've talked to girls that have been that top-heavy, and they're like, you know, you don't feel as pretty because there's no pretty bras that you can wear. So, you know, you just have this giant thing, you know, and it's like, well, that's unfortunate.
A friend of mine's mother was something along the lines of a triple J.
What?
She had to get a breast reduction. Now I think she's like a D, which is still on the big side for those of you who are not knowledgeable in breasts. But she says that, you know, it's worlds different. She doesn't have the back pain anymore, and she could wear all these different kind of clothes and... It's fantastic.
Triple J.
Triple J. Isn't that ridiculous? Oh, doesn't make sense.
That's more than a handful.
That's, unless you're the Hulk, I think that's the Hulk handful. some meaty hands to for that.
I mean, could you imagine like you're having sex with someone that has triple J titties?
I would get smothered. I'm not the biggest of men. I probably wouldn't be around to tell the tale.
Like, you know, what if she gets real crazy and she slaps you with them and then she knocks you out?
Whips your neck back too fast, you breaks your neck. You put unconscious, whatever, you know what I'm trying to say.
Oh, man.
No air to the brain. Well, that'd be a good problem to have, though, I think. If you got to go out, titty suffocation would be at the top of the list. In my book.
I don't know, man. Like, how do you do a eulogy to someone's funeral that died of titty suffocation?
Without giggling through it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, man, Jordan was a beautiful man. You know, he always loved the finer things in life. And there was always two things that he always... There was just two things that... He loved titties.
He loved some titties. I'm sorry. That's all I got. Can't drop the mic. I wonder who's ever dropped the mic at a eulogy.
Oh.
That's got to be... You got to be pretty badass to do something like that. Probably at rapper deaths. Like, I'm sure at Tupac's death, some people dropped the mic on that one. You say your piece, boom. Drop the mic.
Yeah, just like the Las Vegas Police Department.
Oh, I didn't say dropping the ball. I said drop the mic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's topical stuff. Topical stuff on this Keeping It Real. All right, Mikey, we're almost hitting an hour.
Yeah, no. All right, moving along. For this week, for what this nigga's doing, I gotta look at Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard.
Yeah,
uh-oh.
I gotta.
He's leaving.
I mean, granted, he's left. I mean,
he's gone.
I mean, you know, granted, I'm a Lakers fan. I'm a little biased, and we didn't have the greatest year last year, and there isn't much of a team there. But I think that if I was Dwight, I just would have signed for 2 years and just said, you know what? I play with you guys this year. Next year, you guys have an unprecedented amount of cap space. Next year is going to be the biggest free agency year in the past 20 years in the NBA. Like, basically everyone from the 2003 draft class, which a lot of people compare to the 1984 draft class, was Jordan and Hakeem and all those guys came out. And I believe Barkley were all part of the 84 draft. And in the 2003 draft, and because there's three drafts everyone says are the best drafts in NBA history. The 84 draft, the 96 draft, and the 2003 draft. Because in the 96 draft, you had Kobe, you had Iverson, you had Nash.
Well, that was 96 now?
Yeah.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's in 2003, you had LeBron, you had Carmelo, you had Wade. And so anyway, like the smart thing for him to do was just sign a short contract and just kind of play it out and see if he can make things work in L.A.
Yeah, see what happens.
You know, and he took $20 million less. He took $20 million less to go play for the Rockets. But, you know, he's trying to win right now. He's not trying to build anything, which I can't necessarily blame him for. But you know what? I just got to ask, you know, what's that guy doing? Because it's like he took less money to go to Texas. I know their state taxes are significantly less, so technically he got more money because he's paying less taxes. But it's like, you know, when you're talking about legacy, you're talking about how you want to win. Like, you still have the best shooting guard in the game, the most experienced shooting guard in the game.
But see, that's it right there. I don't think he wants to play second fiddle to anybody. I think the Rockets is a team where he could be the star.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, he was a star in Orlando for 7 years.
But the team, but see, he's a decent team to be the star of. He can't, it's like, you know, you can't go to kindergarten and be like, I got a college degree. He's like, this doesn't work. You want to go to, like, Yale and be like, yeah, I got a college degree, but I got, like, the best college degree. I'm valedictorian. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I mean, like,
any kind of analogy.
But like, when he was on the Magic, I'd say, like, three of the four out of the 7 years he was there, he had a really good team. I mean, that team he went to the NBA Finals with. They got beat by the Lakers, but they got there. And, but anyway, I mean, that he wants to go. I was just talking to a girl today that's from Houston. She was like, you know what? People in Houston are going to love him initially, and then he's going to start bitching, and then everyone's going to start hating him, and then he's going to want to leave again. And I was like, well, you might be right. You might be right.
When these guys get traded, do they, like, uproot? I mean, I know some of them are more long-term, but, like, for somebody like him, is he going to, like, buy a house out there? Do they just set him up with a place to live? Or, like, how does that work?
It depends, but, like, I forget how long his contract is. I want to say his contract was 7 years.
So oh, wow.
So he's probably out there now looking to buy a house. And some of these guys, like, when they get all their millions and they buy a home, like they have to buy it in like a specialty area that's like a gated community, so you know, so people don't bother them. So, right. And those homes are really expensive. So when they leave, they don't necessarily just get rid of the house right away. Like for example, like even though Shaq like left the Orlando Magic in '96, he only sold his house in Orlando like in the early 2000s. Like he kept it for a long time. And, like, Dwight still has his house in Orlando. So,
oh, wow.
But for...
That's an investment. They got it. I see.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? And it's like a nice home away from home. I mean, if for like, Dwight, you know, let's say that... I don't know if he bought a house out here, but if he did, then that's four times out of the year that he'll be coming... or two times out of the year he'll be coming to his house in L.A. And then he can hang out here in the summer. You know, and same thing is true, like, in Orlando. I mean, he can hang out there in the summer and just, like, not be bothered by whatever team, whatever city he's playing for.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I know that Jordan still has homes in Chicago, and I think he has a place in Florida or whatever, and he just... And even when he was playing, he was still staying at these places. But, I mean, but when these guys, during the season, these guys, you know, don't hardly go home anyway. They're living out of a suitcase for most of the season.
Those poor guys.
Yeah.
Poor baby.
I mean, think about all the hardships they got to go through, like, you know, not cheating on their wives. Like, that's probably the hardest.
That is the toughest thing. Win games and not cheat.
Yeah. I think that's in every NBA player's locker room. Win games, don't cheat, don't get HIV.
That's the three things. That came directly from Will. Win games, don't cheat on your lady, don't get HIV. In that order.
All right, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Really quick, I want to put. I just tried some of this gum, and it is delicious. I'm really into this gum right now. I've been getting these different flavors, Mikey G. I need you to try it. Okay?
What gum is that?
It's called Extra Dessert Delights. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's fantastic. They have all these different flavors that I've really been jamming to. I'm a kid again. The one that I'm chewing on right now, mint chocolate chip. Like ice cream. It tastes just like I'm eating a bowl of ice cream. It's fantastic. They've also got root beer float. They got rainbow sherbet. They got key lime pie. They got lemon bars. The list goes on. It's fantastic.
I feel like I'd want to swallow that.
I've almost choked a couple times because I've forgotten. But here's the good thing. The flavor doesn't last too long. It lasts for 5 to 10 minutes max. That way it's not too overpowering, so you're not going to choke on anything. As a matter of fact, Mikey G, I gave your lady a piece of this gum, and I think she was pretty fond of it. It wasn't the mint flavor. I let her try chew on some of that root beer float.
Oh, yeah, she likes her root beer floats.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. So that's my two cents. I just want to put a little plug in for extra gum, extra dessert delights.
Search for a sponsor?
Oh, just saying. It's delicious. It's fantastic. And it's cheap. You can find it. And it always gets me. It gets me right in the aisle of the grocery store or Target or Walmart. It's like right there. And it's always cheap. It's less than $2. And you get how many sticks in here, man? 15 sticks of gum. It's fantastic. I'm just saying, if you chew gum, you might as well.
I used to be an avid gum chewer, but not so much anymore.
Well, what happened?
I don't know. I just
dropped the gum tray.
I think just the fact of having to dispose of it turned me off of it.
Really?
Yeah, like I'd just rather have a breath mint, because I just pop that in and it does the job, and then, you know, it just dissolves.
See, and I can't help but see a correlation here between sexual activity. You're the kind of guy who doesn't like to wrap up with a condom, now, do you? You like the girl to use the pill because it gets in her mouth and it just dissolves. You don't have to worry about it. You don't want to have to, like, spit something out or, you know, take something off and worry about disposing it. You're worried about the disposal after the fact. Am I right?
Well, I can't comment because I do not want to embarrass my lady friend.
Well, I'm not saying necessarily this specific lady. Let's just say ladies in the past. I mean, you're a man who's, you know, you're not 15 years old. You've had some experience with the ladies in your past, I'm sure. You don't want to have to deal with, you know, the disposal of anything after the fact.
No, with some of the ladies I was with, I wrapped up anyway because they were looking to have a baby. So I was like, man, fuck you. Literally.
Literally. That's what, you know, man, this will be the last thing because I really do got to get out of here. It's getting on the late side. But maybe we can, like, segue this into next week. But Craigslist. I've been curious. I've been trying to get more into internet, everything internet. From Twitter to Instagram, Vine, all kinds of, you know, Facebook, a little bit more in depth into Facebook, and I was looking at Craigslist as well. Have you ever strolled by the casual encounter section on Craigslist?
Yeah, and it's, I'm sure that's, I'm positive that's just for comedy. That can't be, none of that shit can be real.
I'm telling you, man, I had to do a little reporting, I had to do a little journalism, so I contacted one of these people. I shot them an email. They had a very specific description of what they wanted. I felt that I fit that description. I wrote them up. I got a reply pretty much saying when and where, and I was not expecting that. And I, at that point, I had to back down because I was afraid of where this could go, what I was getting myself into. Literally. But I think, you know, it's worth some further inspection.
Man, I don't want to be involved with that at all. That sounds horrible.
Don't you worry about it. I'll do all the dirty work. I wanted to know if you were even, you know, if it was even in your knowledge of this casual encounter section. And I guess that you know of it.
Yeah, I know of it. And, you know, just out of curiosity, just because I wanted to look at all realms of it, I looked at, like, you know, like what is a bi inquiry look like? What does a gay inquiry look like for, you know, men and women? Just because I wanted to see what they look like.
Yeah.
And don't go in those men's ones, man, unless you're ready to see some shit.
Yeah, what I've learned is that people are just not afraid to just let it all hang out.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, you know, and that's commendable because not everybody should be, especially some of the things that I've seen I shouldn't have seen. They shouldn't have been revealed as willingly as they were, so.
Yeah, like even some of the, you know, it's funny, like when, like, you'll see the casual encounter stuff in places you won't expect it. Like, I was looking for places to live for my girlfriend, for where she lives currently. I was trying to look for any spot for her, just, you know, helping her browse. And there was, like, one inquiry for, it was, like, you only had to pay, or no, you didn't have to pay any rent. You just had to be willing to occasionally do a threesome, or or a three-way with this couple.
Oh, wow, is that all?
And they paid for rent and and utilities and internet and all that.
So when is she moving in? Do you guys need any help with the furniture?
No, I didn't even pass it along to her. But like, I couldn't believe that someone had actually put that on there, you know. And at the end of the description, it said, "Only serious inquiries, please." It's like, what?
Yeah, they're serious about those serious inquiries. That was on almost the like tagline onto every one, every little post that I looked at. It was like, "Only please, only serious, only if you're serious." So that means, and I clearly wasn't serious. So I'm sure I made some people mad. I made some enemies on Craigslist.
Well, that's a place you don't want to make enemies is Craigslist.
Right. As long as they don't know where I live, I don't want these weirdos finding me. That's completely fine. I'm sorry. If you're a frequent visitor of Craigslist and user and participant, by all means, do your thing. There's no judgment here. But it is a special breed of folk, I believe.
I almost feel like it's like a black market.
It definitely is. There's some... depending on when you go on the site as well, it gets specific to time of day. So I was browsing in the morning, and there were some morning offers. And I say offers using that word very, specifically, because there was a girl who was going to be only in town for a while. She was from Chicago. I'm assuming she was a female, just because that's what the picture showed. But who knows in person. But she was in town only for a little bit. She needed a ride from the airport and, like, a place to stay, and something could happen. But it almost seemed like...
What?
She was expecting... We were talking about Helena Bonham Carter and the Oldest Profession. I think she delved in that the Oldest Profession. I think that's what this was. Like, come pick me up. I hang out at the airport. Come pick me up and find a place to, commit the act, and then drop me back off at the airport. That's what I read between the lines.
Like, the airport was her place of business.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and it made, like, the, the customer feel, see, I use customer specifically, too. It made the customer feel like, oh, she's not even going to be in town for, she's only in town for a couple of days. It has no strings attached. Never have to worry about seeing her again or bumping into anything. I take her right back to the airport. No skin off my back. But I think it was just a little too crisp, a little too polished. I feel like this is her racket. And she's just capitalizing on her racket,
And the thing is, that's up there because guys have gone for it.
Oh, yeah.
What happens, you take her back to your place or to a hotel room, and she tells her pimp or her muscle where she is, and they come in, steal your shit, and then you never see her again. And then you can't go to the cops because you picked her up to sleep with her and pay her for sex.
Exactly. You're like, where'd you find her again? Craigslist. Oh, homie, come on.
Yeah, that just sounds so... Oh, man, Oh, people are just nasty.
Yeah, there's a lot of... Speaking of nasty here... Oh, I see. I'm doing it again. I'm alienating our audiences. But there's a lot of big girls. They like to go by BBW. I think it's Big Beautiful Women or Big Boned Women, something like that.
I think it's Big Beautiful.
Big Beautiful? Well, beautiful is loosely used. But there's a lot on there. They're just looking for love, and they will do anything. Hang on one second, Mikey G.
Okay.
Yes? I have something that's yours. Okay, give me a few minutes.
Okay. Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, the beauties of living at home. but on that note, I do have to get out of here.
Oh, your adorable little sister.
Right in the middle of this... The conversation that is complete.
Completely not okay for any child to be listening to.
Exactly.
Ah.
Fantastic. That whole part should be edited out.
All right, man.
All right, my man. But this has been fun keeping it real.
Keeping it real.
And I'll talk to you soon. Until next week?
Until next week.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.